This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall. The usual disclaimer, this is a bonus episode. It is an addition to our weekly casts. It is not as refined and tends to drag on longer.
So we are joined today by The Bomb, better known as Adam Bomb.
Bone. Not necessarily better known as.
I like Bone. I think that's the best one. That's the one that I think DC Dennis started to coin. Which one do you prefer?
It doesn't matter. My friend's father used to call me Adam the Bomb. And my last name is Sir Bone, and so, I mean, I'm happy with either one.
So if I'm not mistaken, you're the most prominent voice of the, is it Connecticut meta?
If there is a Connecticut meta.
Are you the only voice of the Connecticut meta?
Yeah, pretty much.
So that's what it is. But this is also the first time that we've done a chapter pack review with someone stateside.
All
right. So you're representing your entire country, and if you... if you do poorly, it will reflect badly upon your nation.
Wow, that is crazy.
Well, without further ado then, so Adam, want to start us off then on the first card? Oh, this is the chapter pack Fire Made Flesh, just in case we hadn't.
Yeah, sure. Knight of the North, prized one keyword, two strength power icon. While Knight of the North is participating in a challenge, characters with more than one icon do not count their strength. I think that this character is going to win a lot of power challenges.
Yeah, my first glance at him, I was trying to think, who can stop him from winning a power challenge that people play? And that's basically like the newly made lords, Aaron Dampere.
Not much.
Yeah, not much at all. I mean, the only thing I can think of is if you're against a wildling deck, the skin changer is going to own this card, but that isn't going to be a common enough occurrence that this won't be a very valuable card.
I don't even think a skin changer would, you know, own this card because Bera has so many ways of pumping their characters. Well, so many. They have some ways to pump their characters in power challenges. You know, they can use a smuggler's glove to give this guy stealth and force strength, and then he's equal to a skin changer, even if they're running the agenda. So I think, you know, he's very strong.
I don't know about very strong. My inclination is, I mean, yes, he's going to win power challenges, and yes, he's a non-unique with prize, so he's interacting with... the event that we saw last time, it's boosting strength. Knight of Songs is probably gaining stuff. The Seasoned Smuggler can stand him. But he's also not increasing your board position. So I'm not entirely sure how he slots in the decks. I mean, he'll get renown in a Noble Cause deck. But I don't know. I like him because he'll win challenges, but I'm not sure how much I like him.
Sure.
I mean, if you can get a couple power challenges off at a decent claim with him, especially if he's standing because he's prized, he can be pretty scary. I agree with you. He's not a monster or anything. He's got a great trait, though.
Yeah, but does Bera have any problems winning power challenges anyway?
No, not necessarily, but maybe you throwing three of these guys in your deck, you might be able to focus a little more on the other icons.
True, but things like Stannis or most of the Vigilant characters, you can throw them into the Power Challenge for free. The Smuggler, things like that. You go into the Power Challenge, you win it, you stand, then you can go do your other challenges. So, I don't know. I'd like him more for the fact that he's building up on the prize tech than for any other ability of his.
Right, right. And if he becomes in any way ubiquitous, do you think that that maybe some of those immune to character abilities characters might surface a little bit, such as Sir Jacelyn Bywater?
I don't know. That hadn't really occurred to me.
Yeah.
I guess you can still block him with the Viper, yeah.
Yeah, Viper.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that of all of these, you know, we've seen Intrigue ones, we've seen these ones as the power one. So Spy from Starfall, Knight of the North. I think there was another one spoiled at one point. A Greyjoy one with the military icon.
You know,
I think we saw Orcmont Raider a Greyjoy one. But, you know, the Intrigue ones will advance your board presence, essentially. They'll give you card advantage, but there are some Intrigue monocons. The Military ones will advance your board presence, but there are many, many monocons. Mm-hmm. And the Power one, there aren't that many. Most of them are one-strength monocons. They're things like Tommen and Marcella and things that you're playing for other reasons anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's good for winning challenges, but it's the least important of the challenges, even
right.
for Bera at that point.
Early game, right. Late right. game, I think it's more important. And I think Adam was kind of right saying that, you know, this might be a card that opens up a different type of deck design for Bera, where they can worry less about the power challenge in general, relying, you know, heavily on this card and maybe a few other beefy characters to push through the a power challenge instead of what they do now is like a swarm of stealth and vigilant guys.
That's not a bad point with the Knight of the Song, because he'll gain, again, he's got the sort of keyword and the sort of ability that allows him to be the only person in a challenge and win it.
Yep.
So you have a Knight of the North, you'll win that power challenge, then you can use the Knight of Songs to win a military challenge, because he's already going to be strength 3 or 4 or whatever with Joust. So maybe there's something there where you don't have to overcommit in a prize deck, but I don't know. I don't think it's there yet.
No, I don't think it's there yet, but I like the options that it gives you.
Sure.
Deck building.
And both of those cards are knights, so.
So the next one is Heartsbane. It's an attachment. It's cost 1. It's an item and a weapon. It's prized 1, and it has the text, attached character gets +1 strength. Response. After you win a challenge in which attached character participated, kneel Heartsbane to stand attached character. Yeah. I mean, it definitely fits the current Bera themes. I should mention it's unique. It's 1 cost attachment. It's not a huge investment, though I don't like the prized 1, but I mean, it's not horrible. I think you're going to see it included in a lot of Bera decks.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You don't think so?
I think that in almost any case where you'd want this, you're better off with a Bannerman, the one that that gives your character Vigilant and that you can play for free after winning a power challenge. The timing's a little off. It depends how quickly you need it. But this is you're only going to get to use it once unless you're standing it with the Seasoned Smuggler. It works on defense while Vigilant doesn't, but your character has to be participating. I don't know. I just don't see this as all that good.
Yeah,
it gives a small strength boost. It's unique, so it's hard for, you know, Dragon Thieves and stuff to remove it.
Yeah, I think
I'm iffy about it.
I think it's a tough call. But what's interesting is that it is a weapon, so some of the Kingsguard might be able to wear it. So you can, not that this is something that you should play, but the Abandoned Forge can go and seek it out if you somehow want to do some kind of weapon tech. I'm not really that big of a fan of it because it's good. It's better than Vigilant because it works on defense in that sense. But Vigilant's more repeatable, and it's not dependent on being in the challenge. So I feel like you're going to be more on the attack with Baratheon, and not on the defense, and not care as much about losing that challenge and standing someone.
I think the one point is obviously they're trying to make, I mean, it's Heartsbane, it's supposed to be Randall Tarley's sword, and this one has some interaction with the current Randall Tarley, who you can put him into the challenge if you win or whatever. You can stand all the Tyrells, and then you can stand him and get him into a second challenge and repeat that. But to me, that's neat. It's Nedley that there's an interaction between Heartsbane and Randall, but that's still not enough to justify playing this.
You guys have convinced me. I'm going to retract my earlier statement to say that it would appear in one of in several decks. I think it will appear one of in certain decks, mostly for the weapon keyword there, because you'll be able to attach it to stuff that you wouldn't be able to attach the Bannerman to, for instance.
Yeah. All right. So I guess I'll go on to the next one. Ooh, fun. I already get to move on to Greyjoy, my favorite house. So I've got the Orcmont Reaver. He's a Raider bicon with the 2 good icons, 3/3. Prize 2, and when your opponent's playing a character from their hand, you can discard him to kill that character. I really like this card. I'm still not 100% certain it's good. I just think it's the kind of card that it's hard to evaluate its power level when you're playing with it, because what it's doing is changing the way your opponent marshals. And you'll never know when you're playing how your opponent would have marshaled otherwise. But if you play against this card a couple of times to get a feel for it, I think it's quite a threat. It changes the way you marshal. And I think if you save this character You know, after your offensive Valor is Greyjoy and your opponent's drawing two cards, one of which is a character, you can essentially deny that even when your claim is zero. You can say, no, you're not getting a board presence.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the ways I see this guy being used. And I also think that they're... I'm not entirely sold on him, but I really like the card design.
Sure, sure. And I think that what's really important is that he has one of the best icon pairs in the game. And so if you don't...
That's what I was going to say, exactly.
Yeah, if you don't actually use him, you can at least fill the void where Greyjoy has it the most with that icon pair.
Yeah, I think even if you're not ever triggering his ability, the threat of activation certainly will change the way the game is played.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always hard to evaluate how much it changes unless you're playing against it.
Right, right.
I think a lot of people will have a tendency at first to use him, you know, on any type of character that's of equal cost or more. But I think after a while, when we start to see, you know, especially in this meta where there's so many armies, being able to discard a big fat army with this guy could be well worth the 2 power. He's got a positive trait. If you get to use him once or twice before you use his response, I think he's worth the cost. But I'm with you, Alex. I don't know if he's a good card yet or just okay.
I don't want to see him cancel. I mean, I guess you can cancel the cancel, but the houses where you're kind of really trying to prevent the Valor recovery where it's just from draw and you'd like to kill that big character, Lanny might have the Iron Throne out. You know, I don't know. I'm looking forward to playing with him. I'll say that.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm the kind of person that when I see something that I would not want to be against, I end up maybe exaggerating a little bit as to what kind of power level it has. So if I were playing with this character, it makes me wonder if it's really worth the 3 gold and then giving them the 2 power. And hopefully that it's not at a point in the game where that 2 power is going to make a huge difference.
I think because we're having this discussion about him, he's probably built well.
I agree. The next card is the Iron Islands Marines. It's a location warship, 1 gold. Challenges, discard a card from your hand to turn Iron Islands Marines into an army character with 3 strength, deadly, a military icon, and a power icon until the end of the phase. Now, the first thing I think of when I see this is the Iron Fleet Scout, and I don't know if I would say this is better or worse than the Iron Fleet Scout because the cost is a lot different, but you get a much better character out of it. I kind of view this cost as something that you will most likely have at all points in the game, but you might not have that gold to pay for the Iron Fleet Scout. So I kind of find it to be a little even with it.
See, I might if it wasn't that Greyjoy was so draw poor. Again, in a tight spot, you can evaluate the value of this card. But to me, the biggest thing is I actually consider it grossly inferior to the Iron Fleet Scout because the advantage to the Iron Fleet Scout is you can always, if you have that gold, jump it into the challenge later. So you can say, damn, he used that ability I wasn't expecting. Now I need the Iron Fleet Scout to get me out of the tight spot. Well, here you're discarding the card and then declaring it in the regular challenge slot, and it's just a lot less valuable when the deadly, for instance, would be valuable.
I totally forgot about the naval icons.
So I think the naval icons make me say that I would never play this card unless I was already playing the Iron Fleet Scouts and was running some sort of character light deck. Maybe Martell, I don't know. Bloodthirst might have the cards to fuel this, and there you might be interested in doing it. But, you know, discarding a card out of Greyjoy is a huge cost.
That's what I was going to say. You'll probably see this played more out of house than in house for the first little while. It's my gut feeling.
Yeah, I do agree with all that.
All right, John.
Longship Iron Victory. So, it's a 3 cost. It's prize 2. It's a warship. It has the text challenges. Discard Longship Iron Victory. Cannot be saved. To choose and kill 1 participant character. Cannot be saved. Wow, this is a tough sell for me. The current Longship Island Victory is so good that I find it really tough to include this one in my deck. Especially since, you know, the cannot be saved is nice, and, you know, that surprise kill is nice, but I just can't justify 3 cost to do that, plus the prized, plus the fact that I can't play the other Longship Island Victory. With all those things going against it, even though I think the card is interesting, I don't see it getting a lot of play.
I'm going to have to agree with you in that I don't think most Greyjoy decks will feel this, but I don't want to undersell how powerful that effect is. Again, it's one of those threats of activation. Again, it's something that you could imagine in an old way to really, really put pressure on your opponent. They no longer can challenge with their good characters, or they can challenge with two characters in the hopes that they can lose one as Chud to your agenda, but then you use this to kill the bigger character. I mean, yeah, you're not going to replace LIV with it unless you can get a tremendous amount of draw from elsewhere, or maybe the rivers. Mm-hmm. But it's true that once you use this, you can play the other LIV. So I almost have at the back of my mind this sort of HOD LIV where you get to deny your opponent his best character, and then you'll eventually draw your LIV like you normally do. I don't think that's a great idea.
Interesting.
Yeah, right.
But there is that ability that you can do that. And then the other difference is this is a card that you could potentially play out of house if you were a Conquest to Greyjoy and you were a house that had more draw.
Right, now, right.
If I'm correctly.
I want to take back my comment about using this out of house in a Conquest deck, because you probably don't want to be giving this prize to four.
No.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Absolutely not. I'm thinking that this is the type of card and effect where you could take advantage of a lot of that location recursion stuff that Greyjoy has. For example, its prize to Wex Pike returns a prized card from the dead or discard pile when you win an unopposed challenge. If it's still in your discard pile, you can use Iron Lore to bring it back into play, maybe mid-challenges to wreck the Red Viper or a character that they didn't have any fear of losing before this was put into play. Or if this is out, then they're not going to want to play there or have their strong characters participate because maybe they're dependent on them to win challenges with them. So it's really tough for me, and card advantage is one of those things that we're starting to see a lot more options available, and the other Longship Iron Victory is really, really excellent and strong. I think that if this wasn't Longship Iron Victory, it might be something we'd see a lot more of.
I can agree with that, but one of the things I'd be scared, like you're describing a situation where you're cycling this Longship Iron Victory to wipe out characters.
And lose an energy, right?
Yeah, we can't forget that each time you're giving, you know, two power to your opponent each time you do this.
And in most cases, spending 3 gold, with certain exceptions. Some of the cases,
sure.
First mate, you're getting it back.
Yeah, I'm glad that it's called Longship Iron Victory. I'm glad that it's prize two because of everything I just said. So, I don't know. I think I'd be scared to death to see this out, and hopefully it wouldn't beat me on its own, you know?
Hey, and if they do start things, rotation or that kind of stuff, well, I guess they probably won't rotate out the old LIV. It's from Kings of the Sea. But, you know, you could see this one definitely seeing play if you weren't given that other alternative. Well, as the rules lawyer, I get to read Podrick Payne. He's a 2 gold for 2 strength, intrigue, power, bicon. Prized 1 stealth, he gives Tyrion Lannister military icon, and basically while he's in play, cards discarded from your opponent's hand reduce their draw cap. This was a card that Adam talked circles around me as I was trying to explain how I thought this ability worked. It's worded rather strangely. It's worded as a constant that has a duration or a lasting effect that seems to get possibly triggered. Anyway, the rules answer, the short end of it, is that K-Tom has given us his opinion, which is as good as a ruling, I think, and that this card works the way you think it would, which mostly means to me that it's a really interesting, or it will be really interesting, with a lot of the same cards that Marbrand Outriders will be. So that was a card that was spoiled officially by FFG, where you get to draw a card every time your opponent discards a card. So if you can use things like Kings of Winter, like Confession, like Ghost of High Heart, even worse, things like Threat from the East, you could really fill up your hand very, very fast and discard your opponents and force them not to draw.
Rule by Decree.
Rule by Decree discards as well. So, I mean, just imagine this guy with Podrick Payne. You flip Threat from the East. You say, I'm going to discard 3, then draw 3. you discard three and draw three, he discards three and can't draw anymore. And you've already capped him. You've gotten double the advantage out of that plot. It's worth playing as a restricted if you reliably have pod and play.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that he's, if Wheels Within Wheels is not going to be restricted immediately, then it will be very soon, specifically because of this card with Threat from the East and Rule by Decree.
I should say that I think that at least you have to build around him to really make him good.
Sure.
With the general intrigue challenges and the run-of-the-mill ways to get cards out of someone's hand, his ability will probably do nothing most games. I mean, it will reduce his draw cap, but it won't matter
yeah.
at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do start building with him, some of these combos we're talking about are devastating.
Oh, yeah.
You just basically force your opponent to always be two cards.
Right.
You're going to be drawing your two standard cards, and that's it for the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, unless he's revealing cards with Rippers.
Right, you're right. Yeah, unless he's doing with the old effects. Yeah.
Or House Messengers and things
so
like that.
So I stick by it. You will be only drawing those two cards.
All the right.
time. You might be revealing other ones, but you will only be drawing those two.
And he's the second Squire we've gotten. So.
True,
and
true.
People also forget he is stealth. He's two cost intrigue power, not the best icons, but not a bad one. Stealth. He gives a military icon to Tyrion. Plus, he's got
Tyrion,
the ability.
Yeah.
Tyrion, yeah. Plus, he's got the ability. I mean, he's very solid.
And he's not an ally. Amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, and stealth is kind of Nedley because of what he does to, I believe it was Sir Mandon Moore. And he's usually just listening to Tyrion, and he's, I think he's Tyrion's eyes and ears.
Yeah. I'm worried about him. So I think that he's one of those cards where you're like, oh, yeah, he's fine. And then he's going to get played against you with Threat from the East, and you're just going to go, oh, he's broken.
Yeah.
He's broken. I just lost three cards, and I'm never getting them back.
Yeah. Okay, well, speaking of draw, Adam, want to get us to the next card?
Sure. The Mander, 2-cost unique location, the Reach challenges Neil the Mander to draw one card. 2 cards instead if any player has a prized plot revealed. The first thing I think of when I see this is that I want to compare it to the Golden Tooth Mines because of the cost and because it's draw. And it's one of those kind of cards where I think I might want to replace at least one copy of Golden Tooth Mines in my Lannister decks with this because it's going to let me draw a card every round. It's unique. So Wintertime Marauders will not touch it when it's winter. Direct Assault's not going to be able to touch it. Dry Season's not going to be able to blank it. So if I'm using Dry Season in a Lannister deck, then this is something I might want to consider over at least one copy of Golden Tooth Mines, if not in addition to.
It also replaces itself sooner than the Golden Tooth Mines. Well, the Golden Tooth Mines, you have to wait for the
Unless
next plot reveal.
Unless it's on setup. The Golden Tooth Mines will replace itself early.
You're right. If it's on setup, yeah.
Right.
Every other time when you play it, then at that point you'll be able to use this in the next challenges coming up and not have to wait to the next plot.
Right. And Steel Link will stand it and let you use it again.
That's
yes.
True. Still don't think there's a Power Behind the Throne or a Maester's Lanny you really need to build right now.
Right.
The first thing that I think you basically covered all the stuff except the fact that I guess you can run it as an HOD location, but I don't think you really would.
You could give it Vigilant, maybe.
Yeah.
The bearer attachment,
probably. Do you really need to work that hard for draw on Lanny?
No, not really, but still.
But I looked at this and I said, man, this is going to be awesome with Defiance. But it doesn't work with Defiance.
Right.
Into the discard pile, they gain prized, right?
Right. It's when it's on its way out.
Yeah.
And the 2 cards instead, if any player has a prize plot revealed, I'm thinking Common Cause, but we'll get to that later. And I'm not really sure if we've seen any printed prized plots yet, other than Common Cause, have we?
Yes, the Raven plot. Yeah, but I think that's mostly just icing on the cake. You don't need that card for it to be good, which is fine.
But it is something to consider for, like, House of Dreams. If, let's say, that your whole plot deck is all prized, I think that could be a viable House of Dreams location, because then you're drawing 2 cards every challenges phase, and then you can replace some of your draw cards with other cards that might help you win.
Yeah, if we get to the point where we see that many prize decks.
Yeah, if we get to...
They will mesh perfectly into a Lanny deck like that.
No, no, I highly doubt it. But maybe in 7 cycles we'll see something like that.
All right, John?
There are no men like me. It is a Lannister event. It's Lannister only. Challenges, choose a character. Until the end of phase, that character gains a military icon. It does not kneel to attack or defend during military challenges. It's got some half-decent art on it. I love the whole the name of the event itself. And the event's not bad. Now, it's competing with other Lannister events, which is tougher, because Lannister has a lot of great events. But I could see this having some play, for sure.
No, I can't see it having any play.
Like you're just
maybe in Darkwing's Dark Wars, where you're going to need some to dig deeper into your event pool. The event itself isn't bad. You know, a non-kneeler during a challenge, making someone like Corset Jamie, which is somewhat ironic because the card is called There Are No Men Like Me, and it makes another man like him.
Right.
But the event is not good enough to warrant playing currently in a Lannister deck. You've got way too many other options. But if you're forced to dig deeper into the pool with something like Darkwing Dark Words, maybe you'll look at this one.
I'm not sure, Alex. I think in a couple of the Lannister Rush decks, this slots in really nicely. Specifically, there used to be a Maester Rush using the Conclave as it's restricted. A deck like that could use this card to keep a Conclave standing in all 4 challenges and give it the all-important military crest as well, so it can participate in that mill challenge. So I wouldn't say that it's not going to see play, because I think in certain types of Rush decks it will see play.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it might be worth looking into, because it gives some, like you just said about the Conclave, if you can find something, or if you can find characters that trigger effects off of winning challenges in general, or every noun.
I think the Conclave maybe, but in most cases I'd rather run a Citadel Politics or something to get another intrigue challenge on a turn where they're not kneeling, rather than running this.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. I think being able to pass along that military icon to something like the Conclave can be beneficial. I agree with you that it's not going to see play in a ton of different decks, but I think there'll be a couple where it'll be pretty nice to have.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I don't see it.
I think it has a place, but it's not going to find a place in a lot of common decks that you might see out of Lannister.
Just you wait till Hugo or Hill comes and steals 3 characters from your discard pile or something.
Oh, true. Or like even with Clansman Tyrion, like you could have all your clansmen in 2 challenges with him.
Okay, I did think of one thing with Yezzan's Grotesquerie.
Yep.
Give him the military icon, and then he can participate in military challenges.
Yeah, he can participate in all the
attack
challenges
and the defense and stuff. Yeah. People.
He can stonewall just about anything.
Or I mean, let's say that Lannister's getting that same monocon that keeps other multi-con characters from counting their strength. It might be worth using that as some, you know, you could give one of the opponent's characters that happens to be beating you in that challenge with that monocon, maybe give them that extra icon that will then keep them from counting their strength.
Or better, just give your monocon the military so that he can push, he can stop, basically he's a wall in defense again.
Oh, true, sure.
I think we're reaching.
Yeah, right. I think there's some stuff that it can be used for.
Someone's going to break it.
I'm not sure about that.
No.
I think someone might. You might see one or two of in certain decks.
We should just restrict this like Wheels Within Wheels. It should be price 3.
Definitely, yeah. But then it would it would see the same amount of play in my All right, so Bastard of God's Grace is the next card. It's a Martell 2-for-2 monocon, only a military icon. He's a knight. He's a knight and a bastard, I guess, for all the bastard trait interaction there is out there. He's got stealth, and while he's standing, the first event card your opponent plays each round gains prized 1. Now, the card design is interesting. Having a knight that is actually a knight, kind of interesting. The fact that this puts pressure on your opponent's events, especially prized events, if you have Doran in play and they don't want to discard them, but if they do play them a little too fast, you're getting additional power to them is neat. Trouble is, the other Bastard of God's Grace is really good. He's a one-drop unique, same icon, and arguably better. So I think this is not a bad card. A two-cost unique. You've got some icon manipulation. He's got stealth. He's not useless, but I think, again, you'll generally be playing the other bastard.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I feel like the first turn you actually play him, you might have played him too late that turn because the first event card that the opponent may have played is already used up. So you might not even get him the first turn you play him. I mean, you might not even get his ability or the prize one the first turn you play him. And I don't feel like it's effective enough to keep someone from playing events. So, yeah, maybe you might get that one power, but is it really worth the 2 gold monocon with stealth, you know?
I guess you can get 2 power out of it if you're using claiming the prize.
Yes.
It actually does work that way, but
Let me say this again. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about him. I mean, stealth is nice, but I feel like if you're running a Martell House card, you have enough monocons that do stuff for you that you don't want to have another just to hopefully claim 1 power each round.
Yeah, I agree. So next Martell card there, Adam?
The Stepstones, a unique zero-cost location with the Dorn trait, prized 1 keyword, response. After you lose a challenge, discard 1 gold token from a character you control to reveal the top card of your deck and add it to your hand. I like the ability because of the card advantage, but I think it's a little too niche, and it's better out of House Dane and House Targaryen.
Yeah, you can use it with the Viper that no one ever plays.
Yeah. To me, this the card I most want to compare this to is Oberyn's Guile. And Oberyn's Guile is an attachment, which isn't great. It's a 2-cost attachment, but it's easier to trigger. Not as niche. And this one, the main advantage is that it's a 0-cost location, which are always very easy to slot into decks. Mm-hmm. But, this is just working off basically the House Dane and the Viper. There aren't that many other ways to get your gold onto your characters. So, yeah, you'll include a copy in your House Dane deck, and you will never regret it. But that's about it.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, it might go into a summer Martell deck if you need more draw in summer for some reason, because you could be running the summer Dane army that you can put gold onto to pump their strength and use it for draw when you need and stuff. But, yeah, I'm not seeing a...
Song of Fire, probably.
Sure, yeah, Song of Fire.
You can actually milk the draw cap, but then you can just turn gold into draw? That's not terrible.
Yeah, I do really.
You can pay one gold for one card. That's pretty good.
Well, you have to lose a challenge for it, though. So.
Yes, right. At some point, later.
All right, John?
The Drunkard's Tower.
They named a tower after you.
I know, it's awesome.
Well, the next card is named after me.
It's a Stark 1-cost unique location. Got a Westeros trait, like that matters. It's Stark only. When you count income, count 2 additional gold if you control fewer characters than each opponent. I really dislike this card. To me, it does not gel with the current Stark builds. Or the thematic presence of Stark that I've come to know and love. You want to be ahead in characters. You want to be smashing people. I guess they're trying to give Stark some form of recovery. It doesn't seem like a big enough effect to me to merit it. If it was 3 gold, I don't know. Maybe it's... I probably still wouldn't put it in.
No, I wouldn't put it in if it's 5 gold.
5 gold. That's different.
I mean, sure. Maybe you'll win dominance one time. Because of gold.
At 5 gold, you could start building very scary army decks based around.
Oh, sure. I was thinking that maybe I can't even think of like a good character light deck that I would want 2 extra gold for. I mean, maybe this is a good recovery card from a Valor or some other board wiping.
+1 gold location is almost always better in a normal Stark deck. Now we got all the King's Roads, we got the Shadow Pack. Like, there's a lot of ways to get gold nowadays.
Yeah, that's true. I guess I would rather run a King's Road and then just guaranteed 1 gold every round maybe it should have had count 3 additional gold just to be like, all right, maybe maybe I'll get the extra gold to have the extra punch, but I would just rather run King's Road or some other location that is a one gold resource type.
I agree. I think that the last one that we saw, the last pack, was complete garbage. This one is bad, and the next one's mediocre. But I think that maybe if you're starting to build a deck where you're going to basically guarantee that these are triggering, it's a completely different deck. It's like a Stark Hollow Hill or something, like one of the Finns was running at his regional. Then these are fun.
Yep, they're fun.
And they're somewhat thematic if we want to get into Nedliness, where these are supposed to be Moat Cailin's Towers, where, you know, five men are supposed to be able to hold off 500. So the Nedliness is there. That doesn't make the card good. Three gold, it would step up into mediocrity and maybe feel some interesting deck design. But right now, unless you're specifically building to trigger it reliably, it's not a recovery card. It's a card.
Even then, it's not that good, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So I'll read the next one that I said was mediocre. I already spoiled my review on that one. So that's the Children's Tower. Again, same idea. Westeros, one cost, unique location, House Stark only. But this one's dominance. If you have fewer characters than each opponent, kneel it to search the top five cards of your deck for a card and add it to your hand. Now, there's an effect that's actually quite reasonable. It's almost impossible to trigger in melee, because you have to have fewer characters than every single opponent.
Mm-hmm.
But this is search the top five cards of your deck, so some other effects interact with it, the rookeries and things like that. Still not a reason enough to run them. You get to pick the best of those cards, so this is better than just a single draw. And this one is almost good enough to be Valor Recovery and things like that. Almost good enough.
Right,
but
right.
If you are, again, planning on having fewer characters regularly, this is functionally better than draw in a house that has very little of it. So this one's much more interesting.
Sure. And maybe before FAQ 5.0, when Westeros Bleeds was a little more common, then because this is a triggered effect, it's not a response or anything like that. So you can, after Westeros Bleeds, you can then trigger this to help you recover from something like that.
Heck, if you're running this in a Stark Hollow Hill, you can trigger this to go get a Westeros Bleeds if you have one of the top five cards of your deck.
Yeah,
and or, then use it that dominance.
Yeah, or even trigger it when you after you play Westeros Bleeds.
Yeah. That's it. It's obvious that FFG wants people to play more Knights of the Hollow Hill Stark.
All right, so Adam, next card.
Ice. One gold attachment. Unique. Item, weapon, prize 2 keyword, unique. Stark character only. Challenges. While attached characters participating in a challenge, discard ice to choose and kill up to X participating characters. X is the number of prized cards you control. My first thought on this is it's exactly the same thing as the original ice, except it's prize 2. You can only attach it to unique Stark characters. And now you have a chance to kill more participating characters than the other ice. So I think I still would, if I would still rather play the old ice just because it's not prized and it does the job.
Yeah, I mean, unless we see some must-have prize cards appearing in Stark, you know, pretty soon where they're going to be, you know, two or three prize cards in play where you can really take advantage of that, you know, X participating characters piece. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a hard sell for me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, we can easily, I'm sure we'll compare this to the other weapon that comes up later in this pack. I will say that, again, I seem to be making most of the arguments from a Nedliness standpoint. It's nice that they're including these unique Valyrian steel blades, these house weapons, and making them prized. You know, they are prized by their house. They are that kind of thing. So that aspect I like. Prize 2 on an attachment, not so keen on. And the effect just isn't. I mean, it's shaggy. It's big. It could be very cool, but you're not going to trigger this reliably enough in a way that you really like. You have to put it on a character with stealth, unless you need the prize for something. Unless you have interaction with prized, like the upcoming warden attachments that trigger off playing prize cards. I don't see you playing this.
Yeah, that's true. The prized keyword is probably the only reason I might play this over the other ice, and I wouldn't have played the other ice anyway. but I mean, I'm just having a lot of trouble seeing myself play this if I wasn't going to play the other ice.
And you weren't going to play the other ice.
Yeah, exactly. So the next one is Blackfyre. It is a Targaryen attachment. Again, unique, 2 cost. It's prize 1. It has a setup keyword, which is cool. Response, if it is not winter, after attached character declared as a defender, kneel Blackfyre to remove all characters without attachments from the challenge. Wow, it's a much... the effect here is way better than ice, in my opinion.
Again, you have to get it on a character with stealth, or you're never going to use it. And it only works on defense.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work in winter.
It's still way better than ice.
Or
I'm not saying it's good.
Yeah. Or you're going to want to put it on a character with a naval icon or naval enhancement on icon, because then you can build them to put them into a challenge as the defender. Even when you're the attacker, if you want to, or before they declare stealth on you.
Yeah, the fact that you can use this with a naval enhancement, jump it in as a defender against yourself if you have at least one other character with an attachment in there, and potentially win, is kind of neat.
Yeah,
There aren't quite enough naval enhancements in turn to make that work, except that last one, Schoolman. So I actually can see a use for this one, maybe. It is a weapon, which means it might work out of Rusted Maesters. And it's a weapon with setup. You know, again, I'm grasping a little bit. But sometimes you need another weapon, and you don't want to run 3 Aegon's Blades. Now, I have a question, because I actually am not too good on my lore, but I'm pretty sure Blackfyre is Aegon's Blade, isn't it?
I don't know. But, I mean, I know who does. This guy called Google?
Ah, well...
He knows everything.
I'm pretty sure Blackfyre is Aegon's Blade. Aegon the Conqueror, Aegon Targaryen, Conqueror.
It's a house, right? Name.
He wielded a Valyrian steel sword, Blackfyre. So it is Aegon's Blade.
Yep.
It's interesting.
So it doesn't mean you can have Aegon's Blade and Blackfyre in play.
That's cool.
Very interesting. The setup keyword is very important for any attachment, in my opinion.
But 2 gold, do you really want to be setting up an attachment?
No.
Yeah, doesn't give you any board presence.
Doesn't give you that board presence. At least it's easier to attach this. It doesn't have to be a unique target character and some of the other stuff. I do also want to mention another thing, not really about its power level, but that I've always liked some of the tech that was protected by attachments. So things like Flame Kissed, so things like Castellan of the Rock, which can't kneel characters with attachments, because attachments are inherently vulnerable, so the fact that they can offer some protection is good, and I like the fact that this is, again, although it's in Targ and they can get rid of attachments, an effect that does not affect characters with attachments.
Right, right.
But damn Viserys.
I want to read the next one. Everyone else always gets to read the good ones.
I get to read this one.
I know, but...
I do actually really like this.
I like it too.
So this is Fire Made Flesh, the card the pack is named after. It's an event. It's House Targaryen only. Thank God. It's prize 2 and challenges kneel 1 influence to choose a unique character. Until the end of that phase, it gains renown and does not kneel to attack.
Holy crap.
This is a rush card. I mean, Targ has a lot of other ways to use influence, and this is not going to go in certain decks. But it does allow us 2 very, very important, or at least 3 things with major builds that exist already. One is those big stall builds that have sort of taken a hammering from the FAQ now have a Red Viper-like closer. They can use this to gain a ton of power on one turn. They can use this after using a Rhaenys Hill to get a bunch of characters, pick one of them that's unique, that's the only restriction, and give it renown and close on that Rhaenys Hill turn. So that's a really mean way of using it. Dragons like it, and other things like it as well. Another deck is Rusted Maesters. It's not necessarily bad to be able to get 3 challenges out of your Maester if you're having trouble with Stand, even early in the game. You know, so I like that. Renown on a character certainly doesn't hurt. And the third is a deck that I don't think exists yet, but I think this is starting to point us more and more towards a Rush Targ deck. Which exists in Melee, and this will be a phenomenal card in Melee, but in Joust, we might see a Rush Targ deck in the making in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I would agree. I think this might be the card that lets Targ come into the Rush environment or the Rush part of the game. in Absolutely. Jost, like you said, because it exists already in Melee.
Absolutely. And one character that I read that was spoiled was a new Daenerys Targaryen. If you were to give her a not kneel to attack with that ability, oh my god.
I think I saw a text for that card. I'm not sure I believe it.
Yeah, it almost seems too good.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain that was someone messing with people, because I haven't seen a printed version of that card, and someone was basically... Wasn't it something like killing pick a character and then it dies if you win the challenge? If she's participating?
Wow. Yes. I haven't heard this. This is pretty cool.
That's what I read.
Someone pasted the text for the card, but it sounded like wishful thinking from a lonely Targaryen player.
Well, if that is the card, which I doubt, this card, yeah, would make it really broken. But, I mean, until we see that, I'm not going to be too worried about it.
Yeah, right.
All right.
Price 2 is almost good for this card.
Yep. Maybe a little harder in the Brill Stahl decks, because you might be sitting at 11, your opponent might be sitting at 11 or 13 when you start to come back, and you're like, can I really play it? But in Rusted Maesters and stuff, you're probably going to be able to play that fairly early. So I like it.
And I also want to point out that the fact that you pay to use it with influence means that it's going to be hard to cancel.
Yep. So, Adam, next card?
House Bannerman. 1 gold, non-unique character. Neutral, 1 strength, power icon, Bannerman, ally. Marshalling, kneel House Bannerman to ignore all gold penalties on the next card you play this phase. The first thing I think of when I see this card is how the House Tully Recruiter has almost the same function, where you kneel him to reduce the next Stark character you play. And this is a little more interesting because it's made more for the out-of-house themes, and it can get rid of the gold penalty of locations, attachments, and characters, but it's something that I feel like would end up becoming a little more of a claim fodder card, or something where if you need the Bannerman trait, this might be something you'd be using. But other than that, it's not something that I really think is great, but it's an interesting utility card.
I like that it opens up...
I mentioned the Bannerman, because... They seem to, I mean, we've got now the Bannerman who, if you have a card from another house, they gain abilities, and those ones are Bannerman. And then we already have all the house-specific Bannermen who have the discard to get effect abilities. It looks like they're trying to sort of give us a deck to build out of neutral that's just a bunch of Bannermen. Could be kind of cool.
That is very interesting.
I like the design opportunities it offers. I mean... It might let you splash some more out-of-house cards because he'll reduce that gold penalty. But, you know, it's not a card we're going to see in many decks.
Yeah, I think it's a very reasonable card.
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
And I want to point out why, because the next couple of cards will be exactly the opposite. We've already seen some house-neutral-only tech. Chagwell in the last pack. And I had voiced my opinion in that review that I don't like these house-neutral-specific effects. I think that neutral shouldn't be its own house. What neutral does is it splashes houses. And this is a card that works in exactly that way. It does what I want it to do. It's a card that slots well into neutral to let you play in locations, to let you play in attachments that otherwise you're not reducing. I think this is encouraging neutral done right, and house-neutral-specific things is encouraging neutral done wrong.
It's hard to argue with the truth.
Yeah.
Well, then, John, want to read us one of those cards?
Septon Ute. So he is 2 cost, unique, prized 1, stealth, a Septon and a mercenary. The keyword, prized 1 and stealth. And after he leaves or enters play, you get to draw a card. He has the Holy Crest. So I think he's a cool card, but I agree with Alex in that I don't like the fact that he's, you know, specifically for the neutral faction. I think they could have made this card more interesting by saying something like, if you have, you know, more than 2 house affiliations in play, you get to draw a card when he leaves and when he enters and leaves play. And I'd be happy with that, because then he'd be played most often out of a neutral deck where you're mixing a bunch of cards, but he could be played in other decks as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. It does seem that they're reinforcing this mercenary theme for neutral. So we had Shagwell, who becomes a Neil, a Castellan when you're playing mercenaries. Septon specifically lets you get some draw when he comes into play and leaves play, which is pretty good out of neutral. Mm-hmm. And for a Holy Crest, he's got the right two icons.
Yep.
So in a Holy deck outside of neutral, you might well consider him for the fact that he's stealth, got the correct two icons, and the Holy Crest.
I completely agree with that, and I don't think I have much more to add.
Oh, and he fuels the prayers, I guess.
Oh, yeah. That's very important. And him being prized one is okay to me, specifically because of reasons you might want to identify a card as being prized one. The Seasoned Smuggler, who can stand a prized card, so it would be nice to have him use his stealth two challenges in a row. Stuff like that. I mean, prized. I don't think prized is a horrible drawback when it's prized one. I think it can be valuable.
Is that event from the first pack? Is that only Barra characters that get it? No, it's all prized characters that get renown and plus two strength. You use this and on a Power of Faith turn, you're getting three challenges out of a renown four strength stealth character. It's almost worth it for the one character. You got one other Holy Crest out there and. Price could be an advantage in this case. I think I agree. And now, hold on. Yeah, now it's me. Great. So I get to read Zolo. He's another mercenary neutral. Costs one for two strength. Military and power. Prized one. Dothraki mercenary. Response, after you play him, choose an opponent and move all gold from that player's gold pool to yours. So it's kind of nice to play it against Shadows decks.
Yeah.
I guess.
Certain river decks that want to get that four extra gold during the plot phase, if you happen to have them during that
that's,
one.
That's true. Or if they're playing Feast or Famine, I think.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, a choke deck that just stole your gold, and then you get to take that one gold back from the Ice Fisherman.
Yeah, hopefully you don't need that one gold to just play him, you know?
I mean, let's be honest, though. He's one cost for a two strength bicon.
Yeah.
He's good.
He's good out of any house, but... Greyjoy was like, what? Only two strength? Oh, come on.
I don't play those types, but yeah, so he's good for his icon spread.
Right, right. And the fact
that he's unique, I mean, he'll trigger no quarter. He's a Dothraki, so he slots into that deck. I mean, he'll see play. I'm just not so excited about his response.
Yeah, I think that I might play him because of his cost.
I think it's a perfectly fine design for a card. It's got an ability that even if you don't use it, you don't regret playing the card.
Yep.
But when the ability actually does something, you're going to feel pretty happy about it.
Right, right.
Satisfaction.
And you might not want to play him in a Dothraki deck because if you happen to find him when you play your Dothraki Vanguard, you might find him in there. It might be your only Dothraki character, and then you don't get to use his response. It's just worth mentioning. He's still valuable, but I think that there are better Dothraki in a Targaryen deck.
All right. Well, next card then, Adam.
Sure, sure. Calling the Banners event. Prized one. Dominance. Search your deck for a prized card, reveal it, and add it to your hand. Then shuffle your deck. Now, I don't really care for the Dominance search events or effects. Well, events specifically because they're one-shot cards, but it having the prized one keyword has some value like we've talked about before. You could not have it in your hand. Maybe it's in the discard pile. Grab it out of your discard pile with Wex Pike near the end of challenges, hopefully, and then you'll get a free card of your choice that's a prized card from your deck.
Yeah, I mean, the card that this compares closest to is Green Dreams,
mm-hmm.
which I probably overrated when it came out. I thought that it was going to be a driving force behind playing the Song of Fire and the Song of Ice ones, because search, and specifically search that can search out events, is quite rare, and I thought, you know, this is interesting. The fact that it's dominance obviously limits you. You can't do it before you're marshalling, before you were going to use it. But I was very interested by those cards, and they really have barely seen play. And I'm going to do this, maybe make the same mistake. I really like this card. I like the kind of search that can go fetch an event. I like the idea of this card in making your deck more reliable but costing you a power to go get big, flashy effects. So the inner Shaga in me says, oh, yes, this is fun. But I freely admit that I think I'm probably overvaluing this exactly as much as I was overvaluing Green Dreams.
It's the whole dominance thing. It just, that's a tougher sell, you know? Especially late game where you might get an intrigued out of your hand and it's not really doing anything for you.
Right.
But, I mean, it'll see some play. I think you're right, Alex, that in certain types of decks it'll make them more reliable. I think we have to see how much more prized is coming in the next, you know, three packs.
But for instance, I mean, are there any prize cards that we can make a combo deck out of? And I can already think of, like, Caitlin Stark from the first pack.
Yep.
She, if you can build the deck so that you can balance her in various ways, she becomes very, very useful. So the ability to search her out could potentially be really neat. What else? The Reaver Song, for instance. You can run fewer copies of it, search it out. I mean, there's versatility there. Is it good enough to waste an event slot? Probably not. Am I going to do it anyway? Yeah.
Damn right.
To be honest with you, one of the first things I'm thinking of with this is Wheels Within Wheels, because you can use it immediately or save it for plots or whatnot. And then Counterplot, which you can... I mean, they're going to see what you have, and then they're going to be like, oh, crap. I better prepare for that event and either have a cancel ready or play something that I don't care if he cancels.
Yeah, Wheels Within Wheels is going to be...
Actually, the Counterplot really point is decent as well. It does increase the value of Counterplot because you don't have to waste three event slots to it. You can waste a couple event slots on this. And you'll have slightly more versatility, and you could fetch, for instance, Audric Payne once you're ready, for that Threat from the East combo.
Yep.
Sure. And any other dominance card effect that you can play from your hand during dominance that has prized any future design? I mean, I think this is just a lot. This is tons better than Green Dream. It doesn't have as many restrictions.
You can go get that. Yeah, no.
you can in theory play go grab every copy of Calling the Banners if you want to. Get them out of your deck, even though you're giving them three power.
That doesn't sound like a great play, but it is an interesting one.
Yeah, no.
What if you
I don't always come up with great ideas. I just come up with ideas.
Does King Stannis work that way?
Would you claim a power each time you play?
Stannis that gives a power each time you play? You might have just thought up a neat little combo. Not really a game-winning one.
Yeah, well, it's like three power for you, three power for them.
If it is winter, yeah, three power for you, three power for them. And one of that power is on Mace Tyrell, so that basically counting double. No. Or Elder Nestermont, or someone where it's useful, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, gimmick, but neat. I'm glad you brought that up, that you can just search for all three of them and then in your deck. Last card, John.
Last card, Common Cause. It is a plot. It's neutral, of course. Prized one, it is 3/1x, and the text is x is equal to the number of different house affiliations among the characters you control. Each character cannot contribute more than one affiliation to this count, which I love. So someone can't just, you know,
play Jackin and get
exactly play Jackin and get five claim or something. It's interesting. We've seen a lot of, you know, two affiliation characters, especially in like Stark. Barra, Lannister tend to have these double affiliation characters. So, you know, I could see people getting two or three claim out of this plot in certain decks, but I don't see a lot of people getting four or five claim. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is something that, you know, I saw some people reacting already to this saying, like, oh my God, you know, it's going to be so easy to get four or five claim. I don't think it'll be easy. Is it possible? Sure. But I don't think we're going to see it very often. And, you know, we also heard a lot of people complaining when they first saw the naval plot that said, you know, if you had a naval attack or in the challenge, you get three. Yeah. Right. But it didn't turn out that good. And in fact, when me and Alex built our Gen Con deck, we took it out because we wanted a reliable claim two more than a unreliable claim three. And I think we're going to see the same thing with Common Cause. People are going to just say, you know what, I'd rather just have a reliable claim to with four gold instead of this 3/1x lot.
I think the slight difference there is that if you meet the condition, you do it for every challenge, while naval superiority, you don't.
True enough.
So, and don't discount, a claim three sets of challenges is really big. But again, for most of the rest, I agree with you, and I also want to mention that if your opponent Forgotten Plans you, you're going to be very sad.
Yep.
Sitting on a 3-1-0 going, well, this is like Valor, but one more gold and one more initiative.
Wow. And I didn't get to kill all those characters.
Yeah, exactly.
That is bad. Forgotten Flames is brutal here.
But there might be some decks that can really abuse it.
That we'll Bannerman deck we were just talking about. Playing neutral Bannerman and you got a ton of them. Don't know if that's a deck yet, but Jim will eventually build it and crush me, and then I'll be vindicated.
Well, which house do you think might be able to take advantage of this plot with the characters they currently have, without any out-of-house shenanigans? Like, for example, Stark has Brienne of Tarth, who's Stark and Baratheon, so she could count as a Baratheon character for this purpose.
They got Theon, too.
Yep,
that's my Greyjoy character.
The Hound is Stark and Lannister for one gold. I'm not sure if I can think of any other icon pair.
Stark's got Sir Jon Mormont, too. Littlefinger?
That's also Stark and Lanny, though. So.
Yeah, it's also Stark and Lanny. It gives more redundancy to that type of deck. Because,
right.
You know, if you only have one of, you know, four possible or five possible characters that have affiliation, the chance that you're going to have all those out at the same time to make this a three claim.
Yeah, I agree.
Is probably low. I think you have to
build this out of a deck where you're splashing a lot of cards, whether you're using Conquest or Treaty or Alliance or Neutral House.
Yes.
Right.
And I think that's where it has to go.
It'll be great in Conquest decks.
Yeah.
It'll be fine in Conquest decks.
Yeah, I agree. But generally, I think I would rather run a two-claim plot that has an effective text box with maybe even four gold income, like Retaliation or Men of Pride or something like that, by default. But if you can actually consistently get two-claim or more, then it could be more valuable.
All right, well, that's the last card of the pack. And I realize that I've been somewhat harsh on this pack for individual cards not being at a very high power level. That said, I like this pack from a design standpoint. I think it did some really interesting things. I like Fire Made Flesh. I like the way House Bannerman works. I like the questions people are asking about Common Cause. I liked calling the banners. I liked the pressure Orcmont Reaver puts, which is not a card type we've seen. Same thing with LIV. It puts pressure in a way we haven't seen before. And even the Stepstones makes me almost want to look at House Dane cards again and then come to my senses. The Stark ones, again, they're trying to challenge a preconception. Podrick Payne works differently. The Mander works slightly differently. So I actually really like this pack, despite thinking that most of the cards are of middling to low power.
I agree with you, Alex. I think it has some interesting effects that we haven't seen before, like you said. And I usually rate cards a little higher than most people, and I was also a little harsh on some of these cards. But I do like those new Greyjoy cards that discard themselves to do some damage because they're high risk, high reward, especially Longship Iron Victory.
The Shaggy player in me likes this pack. The Jamie, not as much.
Mm-hmm.
And the Nedley in me was satisfied. I did bring it up a couple of times, and most times I was like, you know what, yeah, this makes sense.
I mean, overall, I think the pack is a success.
I agree.
Well, we haven't played with it yet.
It's a success.
Conceptual success.
Right.
All right. Okay, well, I guess that about wraps it up. Thank you very much, Adam, for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun.
And we'll hear back from our listeners to see whether you represented America poorly or you misrepresented them.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.